comfort zone, number 29. I did a whole chapter on comfort zone, so I'm not going to talk about it further, but the concept basically is people make X amount of money, and then at that point they can pay their bills, they stop selling, they stop going forward. And to be a top 1% sales rep, you have to have a reason to go beyond your comfort zone. You can't just have an opening and say, I want to make more money. That won't last. If it's an emotional need like status and recognition and wealth and power, and you're truly driven by that, you will go past your comfort zone. That's one way to do it. The other way is just to have a higher purpose for your money and to put it to good use. You want more money than you actually personally need because you want to support a cause or something like that. 30 is a lack of initiative. Some people are just not self-starters. They have, you know, they're not self-directed. They're basically going to do what people tell them to do and not much else. And when they go into sales, they just hang around waiting for things to happen, and they die as salespeople because sales is all about seizing the initiative, being self-directed, and internally motivated to move forward. 31 is ego. We all have an ego, but some people are bigger than others, and some people are more attached to it than others. Some people really can't get past that ego. Like, they can't admit. They might have been have 20 years experience in salespeople, and they switch jobs, and they can't admit they're not the top guy anymore, or they don't know how to do this. They have to know everything. They're too used to knowing it all, so they're not adaptable in that case because their ego gets in the way. They can't learn because they always have to be right. They always have to have known it before. And that prevents them from learning. Or it prevents them from listening to other people because they know it all. So they don't communicate well with a prospect. They don't really listen. Many bad things happen from that. You need to do what they call unattaching from your ego. You need to monitor your ego. Actually self-observe. Okay, why am I mad right now? Why am I jealous? Why am I not listening? Why am I thinking this person is an idiot? Is this my ego, or is this a rational thing I'm doing here? Of course, if you're not in touch with your emotions, or you don't understand the various emotions, anger, fear, frustration, you know, giddiness, there's like all these different flavors, hundreds of them. It'll be really hard for you to understand what you're doing, to self-monitor. Another good way is just to learn meditation or to study something like Buddhism, where they literally talk about how to unattach from the ego in a more purposeful way. And that will give you lots of advanced training in that respect, which I would highly recommend. Because on an ongoing basis, as you meditate and as you let thoughts come in and thoughts go out, you don't attach to the thoughts. By definition, you're no longer attaching to your own ego, and you're really going down a level to your more like a subconscious mind. That does wonders for you as far as your ability to work with other people and to communicate with other people in general. You tend not to get mad as much because you understand that anger is a defense of the ego. You tend not to get jealous because jealous just is a sense of unworthiness that someone else has something you don't, therefore they're more worthy to you. And if they're more worthy, that makes you less worthy. All of which is a illogical, irrational, emotional ego defense. Almost all of it boils down to ego defense, whereas the ego does anything it can to protect itself. And it actually takes over your life, and the whole life now is based on protected ego. You can never be wrong. You always have to be right. Everybody else is wrong. Everybody else is not as good as you. It's all about ego defense. Usually this came about from feelings of inferiority. You were put down and not appreciated, usually by a father or someone else, an authority figure above you. Made you feel like you're unworthy, so your whole life has been trying to prove your self-worth. The ego is very fragile, and it's not sustainable. At any one time, something bad will happen, and your ego gets crushed. If you detach from your ego and these things happen, it doesn't matter because you're not attaching to these events. When applied to sales, I mean, this is literally the type of thing that by itself can thrust you into the top 1% in sales. And it's a topic that I'll prefer the discussion on another chapter. I'll get more details on that. 32 is similar to ego. It's attached to outcomes. More specifically, if you're only going to be happy if someone says yes, they have to buy. You're only going to be happy if this happens. You're only going to be satisfied if this happens. Well, things don't always go your way, so you're setting yourself up to be crushed for a failure. Instead of attaching to this one individual saying yes to your proposition, what you need is a pipeline. If you have 10 deals in the works and 8 of them say no, you still have 2 sales, which in a lot of jobs can be great performance. Therefore, it doesn't really matter to you which one of the 10 decides to go your way, as long as statistically enough to make the job viable or for you to be a high performer. When you attach the outcome to, you start, segueing into desperation and to fear. And now what it is a fear game. Your mindset is now fear of what happens if this doesn't go right. You need, again, to put it in perspective. Look at the situation. Are you going to die if this event doesn't happen the way you wanted it to, yes or no? Can you control what the person does? Well, you can't. Usually in sales, control the prospect saying yes or no. So if you attach to that outcome and you obsess it with it, you're obsessed with that outcome, you are literally setting yourself up to fail and guaranteeing your own dissatisfaction and unhappiness. 33 is control freaks. They micromanage everything. Everything has to be perfect. They have to control every little aspect of everything. What happens, you'll be continually frustrated in life because you have very limited control over other people and events. Therefore, if you are attached to controlling them, bad things are going to happen to you. Why do people become control freaks? They have fragile egos to a large extent. They're afraid. It's mainly fear. They're trying to control everything to prevent bad things from happening and to appear perfect. It's like an ego defense, or it's a battle against a constant battle of fear. They cannot handle uncertainty. They can't deal with the uncertainty of life, and life is uncertainty, and I can prove it. Give me the date and time and method of your death. Exactly. You don't know. There. Life is uncertain. For all you know, it can happen in 3 seconds or in 30 years. And you have no idea. And that's hanging over your head like the sword of Damocles. It's your constant death. It's just hanging there. At any one time, you could be dead. That's how much control you have of life. Here's where I look at the sword hanging over my head. I might as well go surfing because I don't know how long I got. You know what I mean? And then, a lot of this, I'm not sure if I have perfectionism in here anywhere, but control freaks and perfectionism go hand in hand. It's an obsessive attempt to control things to have any kind of sense of security. It's a reaction of fear. It's also the idea that nobody else could be trusted to do anything, therefore you have to show them how to do every little thing. You have to control everything because they may not do it the way you like it, or they might not do it right. You have no faith in other people. And usually everything you project on other people, it's like 101 called projection, illustrates an aspect of you. That's you, not them. If you're the kind of person, everybody's crooked. They'll rob you blind to get a chance. These are people who steal. These are people who cheat. People who say these things are crooks. My favorite, by the way, is someone always says, oh yeah, God bless. Jesus, God bless. The biggest crooks I've ever seen in my whole life use religion as a shield. They hide behind religion like a thief uses the cover of darkness in the night. They put that out there trying to be all pious sounding as a guise and as a ruse. So when they rip you off, where they slip the knife in, you didn't see it coming. You know, so my opinion is, you know, I hear people like talking like that, hold on to your wallet. Now, I'm not talking about daily life, but I'm talking about in the business world. In the business world, you know, you have certain mores and social contract typically is not to promote your, proselytize your religion during work. To other people who may have different points of view. Otherwise, we'd be in a big mess, especially with a more pluralistic, diverse society we live in today. It's not like it was in the 50s anymore. Get used to it. Negativity and paranoia. I wrote down there, well, maybe they are trying to get you. Maybe the world is out to get you. But usually, it's just irrational fears again. You're paranoid and you're overly negative about outcomes. In other words, you're trying to predict the future, which none of us can predict. And your prediction is bad things. A Pollyannish, over-optimistic, looking through the world through rose-colored glasses is exactly the same. It's the flip side of the same coin. And at that point, everything's wonderful. Everything's going to be great. I used to see this one guy, have a nice day. It's a wonderful day. Don't tell me what the kind of day my day is. Have your own wonderful day. Leave me out of it. Okay, don't tell me I'm wonderful. Have a nice day. I hate that. You have a nice day. What do you mean, have a nice day? I'll have whatever kind of day I want. You have your nice day, and I'll have the day I have, okay? Thank you very much. I'll have the day as it is. I don't need to have it to give it a value judgment before it even happens. How do I know it's going to be nice or bad? I don't know. We'll see. Being overly negative and paranoid, again, is just as irrational, so to speak, as being overly optimistic in that you're both trying to force the future and yet you can't control that future. What you should have is an aware day. Be aware. Look for the opportunities. Fix things that need to be fixed. You know, help people that need to be helped. Live the day to its fullest. Become aware of what you're doing. Control your own ego so it doesn't get away from you. You know what I mean? Don't attach to everything you see and outcomes. Have that kind of day. That day will be more realistic. It's a matter of attitude, which again, I've talked to after the whole chapter when I think about attitude. Grandiosity. Yeah, I've met people that get a job, they're not making calls. I'll tell you, I got this big deal, I got this network, I got 100 accounting firms are all going to relay deals to me. Well, I got this one deal. It's a $20 million deal. And they're out there seeking out Mount Everest to climb. They just start a job. But no, the little deals aren't good enough for them. This is a ruse. This is called work avoidance. This is an excuse not to sell anything while they work on this big deal. And then when the big deal doesn't materialize after 2 months or 3 months, they quit because they got nothing going. The biggest mistake you make is chasing rainbows like that. You could have made 10 small deals, but no, they weren't good enough for you. Well, they're good enough for me. My biggest success I ever had in a job, I would sell this CD-ROM systems when I was in my younger days, and I hit all kinds of really small shops, not the big ones. I'd go all these little small ones, and I'd sell them. In the meantime, I had guys chasing, oh, this guy's got 40 tire stores. He's going to buy 40 units. Yeah. And then by the time you negotiate it 6 months later, plus they get the price cut so low that there's no margin left anymore. You don't make any money. You could have just sold a few small shops and made just as much, if not more. And then what happens, the guy didn't do it anyway. They changed their mind at the last minute, and someone else, like, cut their price by a buck. You know, I have very little faith in the big deal. I have faith in the now. Pick up the phone, find someone that can make me a decision today. That's what I like to sell, the guy who could make a decision today. Usually the smaller end of the spectrum, because the decision maker is there, and they're not all fat and happy yet. The problem with the big guys is they're all fat and they don't need you. They don't have to do anything. The small guys aren't there yet. They're desperate for success, though. They're on their way up. Those are the ones who will make things happen. They'll take risks, make investments. But mainly it's an ego thing, as if they're not working on a big deal, somehow this job is below them. I can't possibly just be a sales guy. I should have been, you know, a famous surgeon or a lawyer or Donald Trump or whatnot. Therefore, if I go after the big deal, I could tell my friends, well, I may be selling, you know, this software, but I got this, you know, trade association of manufacturers. I'm selling 1,000 different companies this software. Millions of dollars. Oh, wow. You know, they want bragging rights to their buddies when they drink beer. They can brag about their life. Of course, in the meantime, they're living in their mother's basement, taking a bus, because they have no money. Now take off your crown, King Fruit, and pick up the phone. Cynical. This is kind of special. Everything is bad. Nothing can possibly be good. Everything sucks. Well, here's why that's wrong. It's very simple. All things don't suck. Okay? Baby ducks in the springtime swimming behind their mother. Okay? Beautiful sunsets. Really nice gourmet Thai food. I can think millions of things that don't suck. A Ferrari. Beautiful homes. Nice people. You know what I mean? Things to do. Good books. Good movies. Lots of things don't suck. So you're wrong there. And number two, if you're cynical about everything, what you're in effect you're trying to do is predict the future. I know everything's going to be bad. So therefore, everything sucks. Because you're trying to, but you can't predict the future. None of us can. And here's why they're doing that. It's a defensive action for their ego. If I say everything sucks and then bad things happen, then I'm mentally prepared. But if I'm optimistic, I can have things taken from me. These are people who were jilted and hurt. And they haven't gone beyond their hurt. They've been screwed by someone. And rather than risk, again, opening their heart to the world, they hide in this little shell. And they're totally cynical or negative or paranoid. And this is purely ego defense. They're trying to protect their fragile ego from more damage. If they detach from their ego, they'd be instantly liberated. Then there's the people who are reinventing the wheel. They won't follow your sales process. They always have to have their own idea. How I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. They should have been artists or writers or movie producers, but somehow they're in sales. They have an uncontrolled creative thing, and I appreciate that. You need to get yourself a creative outlet. Go write a book, join a theater troupe, you know what I mean, paint, whatever it is. Do some creative outlet. But in sales, a lot of times, if you have a process known to work, everybody else is working, you should just follow that process. If you can improve it here or there, great, do it. But they're using it as a work avoidance technique. In other words, well, I can't go out and sell because I'm engineering this process for another 8 months. And it's an ego because they're better than everybody else. They have to prove it by improving everything around them to show that they're smarter and better. In the meantime, everybody else is silently making calls and making money while they're, you know, off trying to change everything. They're either too stubborn or too proud to accept somebody else's help. Somebody else's methodology. They're overly creative and they need a creative outlet. Or their work avoidance, everything has to be this way or perfect. It has to be my or I can't possibly do it. And then they could say, well, not, I'm not just a salesperson, I created this thing. You know what I mean? It has to be something better than just I'm a sales guy. You know, another ego thing. If it works, just start using that. You can always improve it later. The best thing you can do is take what's known to work, start with there, and just run, start selling, and then you improve it as you go along. Great. But don't sit down and stall out. 38 is a similar thing. Great ideas. Oh, I got this great idea. I'm working on this great idea. How about a great idea? Here's a great idea. Pick up the phone and dial it and start selling things so you can get money. Okay? There's your great idea. Otherwise, shut up. I don't want to hear any more great ideas out of you. This is a classic work avoidance maneuver. They'll have one great idea, and if you acknowledge it, then every day they have another one. And they want to talk about it for an hour or two, which is a lot more fun than working, as we all know. It's easier to come up with great ideas than it is to pick up a phone. 39 is a personal favorite. My boss is an asshole. Yeah, your point being? So? I mean, can you only work for people that you like? Are you going to go bowling with this guy or work with him? Is this guy going to make you money? Yes or no? My boss is an asshole is a get-out-of-jail-free card. You can quit any job you want, and all you have to do is tell people, after you tell yourself about 50 times, well, he was an asshole, therefore I quit. Oh, yeah, I know what you mean. Because other idiots like that, other posers, will say, oh, yeah, I had a job like that. I quit, too. And those are the guys with 3 months, 4 months, 6 months on their resume over, you know, job after job after job. And every one of their bosses, by the way, was an asshole. What's the odds? Lightning doesn't just strike once in the same place. It strikes 19 times. Every place you are, lightning strikes. But like I say, so what? So your boss is an asshole. Is your boss providing you with a really good opportunity to make money? Is he helping you make money? Is he teaching you? Is he a good coach? Being an asshole has nothing to do with it. Donald Trump is successful, and he's an asshole. Larry Ellison at Oracle is an asshole. Bill Gates is an asshole. Almost all those guys are assholes, ultimately. There's hardly any nice guys there. So what? Get used to it. Start your own company, and then you're going to be an asshole. And all your employees are going to call you an asshole, and it will serve you right. Because you will actually be an asshole, by the way, as opposed to me not being an asshole. All right. I hope you guys can tell I'm being facetious here. Last but not least, and again, this is another personal favorite because it was my first wife, actually. Oh, you can do it. She was so self-effacing. Everybody loved her. She was a nurse. Oh, you can do it. I can't do it. Oh, you can do it. Oh, I can never do it. I can never do that. So she pawned off everything on me, which is basically why we got divorced. And it was really simple. It's an instant get-out-of-jail-free card. All you have to do is be real modest and self-effacing. Oh, I can't do that. You can do that. And tell everybody else they can do it, but you can't. So we're all going to the front. We're going to fight for our lives to save our village from the incoming hordes of barbarians. We got our spears and swords and axes, except for Bob. I can never fight. You guys do that. I can't fight. No, Bob. I'll tell you what, Bob. I'm going to crucify you upside down, okay? Upside down, or you're going to come with us and fight. That's your choice, Bob. And we'll see if you can do it or not. But I'll tell you, when they come running at you, Bob, I advise you to lift your sword. That's what I advise you to do. How convenient. How convenient for that person to say that and let everybody else carry the weight. Okay, what do you guys think of that? Any topics you'd like to discuss from...
One, I believe in every one of them. I was in management, so I saw a lot of it going on. And two, you just hit me in the face about, I'd say, 20 times, unfortunately. And in saying that, I figure there's pretty much two ways for me to go at this point. And in a couple of weeks, you're either never going to hear my name again, or I'm hoping to laugh about it at one of the winter's weekends going forward. And I was in the mortgage business, too.
Well, Greg, you got it all going for you. Well, Greg, I'll tell you what you also have going for you. You have the courage to come forward and say that, because this is almost, for all of us, me included, like a 12-step kind of a scenario. Now, I'm not a fan of 12-step groups, but in general, people know what that means, so I'll use that analogy. The idea being that until you say, look, I'm a control freak, and admit it to yourself and others, hopefully, it's like the first step to self-awareness. What happens is the walls around the ego are instantly breached, okay? And once that happens, once you crumble one brick away on the whole wall will come down now, because from inside is more powerful than your ego. Your true self, wrapped up in that little, fortress, can now shine out. And all you have to do for almost all of these, basically, they're like bad habits. They're misperceptions of how reality works. They were poor training, and they were, all, for the most part, ego defenses. So you can literally break all 40 of these almost at the same time. That's the beauty of this. You can literally say that I'm going to look down this list, and I'm going to understand that all these have something in common, which is why I was able to generate this list. The theme, I wrote all these really fast, by the way. I wrote a bunch of them, and I developed it, and I added a bunch more. I worked on this for a couple of years, and I taught this particular one many, many times. It was a mandatory part of my training at one point in one of the projects I was working on. I taught hundreds of people this, and they found it, for the most part, very negative, by the way. they hated it, because, that's like saying, look, I have another appointment at a dentist tomorrow, but I go really regular now, because I've had bad experiences about not going regular to a dentist, so I spend the money to get my teeth cleaned. But, it's really hard to tell someone, when's the last time you had your teeth cleaned? Do you have gingivitis? Your gums bleed when you floss? Do you have calcium, you know, plaque deposits? I mean, undiagnosed cavities. I mean, people squirm because a lot of people don't like going to the dentist, so they don't. And yet the best thing you could possibly do to them is pretty much goad them into going before it, because the longer you wait, the worse things get, right?
Exactly.
Cigarette smoking, the longer you wait to quit, the worse things get. Overeating and unhealthy, other unhealthy lifestyles. Like, we all have the same kind of body. We need exercise, good food, not too much, not too little. Water, you know, sunshine, air, right? We need to take care of certain things. We all have different health maintenance needs, and if we're fastidious about that, we'll enjoy longer, you know, healthier, more happy lives, because you'll feel better. It's not just, you know, that you're going to live longer. You just feel better. You'll perform at a higher level, right? It's really hard to be a top professional without being physically fit. Do you know that race car drivers are one of the most fit people? They withstand huge physical stresses on their body when they're in as pilots and stuff like that, and let alone all these other sports. I mean, any profession or sales. So what happens, though, when you confront them with this, they don't want to hear it. It's really, really a shock. You have to admit to yourself, yeah, I've been neglectful about this, this, and that. One of the best ways to get this, to cure these issues, is very simple. Do something like that that you were putting off, like dieting or exercise or quitting smoking or cutting out chocolate or whatever else your addictions are. You know what I'm trying to say? If you can beat those, going to the dentist, things you put off, right? If you can beat those, you're getting some of this kind of self-discipline, and you're taking more control of things, and you're able to face unpleasant things. And in fact, you're training yourself to deal with unpleasant realities. So now it becomes easier and easier for you to admit, you know, hey, this is my situation. I fell into this. And here's another way to look at it. It's not you that's paranoid. Your behavior was paranoid. It's not you that's cynical. Okay, your behavior was cynical. It's not you that was looking out for easy money. You developed a habit of looking for easy money. You can change you instantly anytime you want. Any of these things, or any related thing like this. You have 100% control. Brush your ego aside, which is easier said than done. Again, meditation is a training for that.
I got hypnosis a week ago, and I was working a little bit. It's crazy. Things I you know, again, I'm putting it out there, but it's crazy things, Ben. This opportunity, and for everyone who's listening, this opportunity is the absolute, I want to say it this way, the easiest job I think anyone could ever have. But when I say easy, I mean that it's easy because everything is right there in front of you, and all you really have to do is do it. If you get on the phone, if you get enough people to call, if you're doing your research, you get enough people to call, and you call. And even if you just read the milestones and you weren't really good at it, you know, if you just read through them basically and at the end had the right attitude that either you're going to do it or you're not, and you're losing money and you're an idiot if you don't, and you did that and you did that enough times, you're absolutely going to be successful and you're absolutely going to have what's going to be a really good life. And for me, I looked at all that and said, well, as easy as everything is, if I don't pull it off, then what am I going to do? And like you said, I you know, I like horticulture a little bit, but I don't think it's going to pay the bills. And I just had a baby, and I all this different stress related to that, and that's what's caused all those little things that you just described come out in little bits to make a big, giant wall for me. And it's just finally coming down just a little bit at this point.
I appreciate that, Greg, and I wish you the best on your journey. We'll be right along with you. So anybody else have a comment on the overall failure modes in general or any specific one?
Paul, this is Catherine.
Okay.
I can really relate to being conflict phobic. I kind of grew up with the attitude that, you know, nice girls do not start fights or, you know, engage in conflict in any way. And it's taken me a long time to realize that it's not a bad thing. And I like your approach with that, that it's not a bad thing, and there's other ways to bring that out and resolve it in a healthy way.
Well, I appreciate that. Let me give you another way, another methodology, okay?
Okay.
Guy goes to the doctor, is grossly overweight and smokes. He's already got, you know, diabetes and coughing, and he's in bad shape. The doctor could just say, well, you know, you're doing the best you can. Life, you know, I know it's tough. You should probably cut down a little bit of smoking. See you later. or you can tell the guy, look, you're going to die, right? You're overweight. You've got diabetes. You're smoking. You're dead. I see people like you all the time. 5 years, you're in a box, and yet you have three young kids at home. Now what? What's going to happen to those kids? Your wife now, how's she going to work now and support three kids? How much life insurance do you have? I don't know if you can get life insurance. Looking at you right now, I wouldn't pass you on a physical. Now what? Are you going to get rich in the next? Who's going to take care of your kids? You love your kids? I would show him a diseased heart, a black lung. I would beat that guy up. Why? Because I don't smoke and I'm not fat, therefore I'm better than him, right? It makes me feel good to put him down, correct? No, it's my job. I'm a doctor. I'm going to use whatever method. I'm using the reality of the situation, and I'm going to beat him on the head with that reality. I didn't make the reality up. The reality is exactly what I said to it, and I'm just going to do my job. And what does that involve, Catherine? Conflict. That guy, you can't talk to me like that. Well, I don't like you anymore. That doctor's not very nice. You're damn straight up not nice. But I'm not paid to be nice. I'm paid to keep you alive and healthy. And I can't do that if you're in a box, okay? Or are you going to be cremated? I'll say, when you're in an urn then, okay, buddy? See, it's my job then to beat that guy up because that's my responsibility, all right? So if you're in a war situation and, you know, this guy's a sergeant, you're not, you got to listen with the guy. So he's trying to get you out of that combat situation in one piece, okay? He's going to say things you might not want to hear. Drill sergeants do it when they're training, you know, and I do it as a sales trainer slash manager slash coach or whatever. You know what I mean? I'm going to tell you, my job is to do this, and I'll tell you what, I'm not going to shirk my responsibility, and I'm going to do my job even if you're not doing yours. So, you know, people may not appreciate that, so I'm going to tell them the truth. The good ones will, and that's the only ones I care about. So, you know, Catherine, you picked up cultural programming. You were programmed by your culture how nice girls or women behave, okay? But yet you want to be in this playground over here where it's not done that way. And anyway, you want to do these guys some good. It's for their own good. If you have a prospect that needs, you know, their share price has been low for years, nothing's going on, their company's stalled out, and you have a program that can, you know, market them to the investors, allow them to raise more money, bump their share price up, and that's, and he already told you that's exactly what he needs to do, then, and he has no plan B, otherwise he would have been using it, then it's your duty to close that person. It is your duty, just like it was the duty of the doctor. It's your duty to close, and close means what? To get a decision, not a yes or a no. That's the difference. But you have to force that person to make a conscious decision instead of, well, I'll call you back next week. No. Why would I want to call you back next week? What would be the point? What would we talk about? Well, the only thing we have to talk about, we just talked about. The only thing left to do is you make a decision, yes or no. You got plan A, you know what plan B is. Choose. Make a choice. And then what will happen is that two will get pissed off, and two will say yes, and one won't decide. So, you know what I mean? You get 2 out of 5, which makes you a superstar instead of 0 out of 5. That's a form of conflict in that you're not being nice and polite. You know, you're not doing that polite stuff. You're forcing that person. Why? Because you want it, you're doing it for his interest. See, when you're forcing a person to decide for your best interest so you can make money, now you're basically a high-pressure salesperson, and that's what you don't want to be. But when you're forcing someone to make a decision for their interest because you're looking after their interest first, you're trying to serve others, you have a complete, you have like James Bond, right, 007, you have a license to kill, you have a license to close, when you're closing for their good, not yours, and their best interest. If you don't think it's in their best interest, just simply tell them, this is not for you. Perhaps you can refer me to someone who I might be able to help because I don't think you should do this. Right?
Right.
So either, here's what you need to do. Either tell them, you know what, I've decided this product is not for you. Therefore, I want a referral and goodbye. A. Or B, close them for a decision and don't quit until you get it. Don't hang up. So either it's good for them or not. Catherine, which is it?
Well, that's an excellent point of view and a great way to approach it.
That's why, like I said, I could do a whole hour and a half just on the conflict thing, and maybe I will. But there's a sneak preview. That's what it would sound like when I did. I'll be in a mood one day, and I'll do that one. That will work right now. So anybody else have that? Does everybody else understand what I just did?
Yes.
See, by definition, when you serve others, you automatically remove your ego. Do you understand how it works?
Yes.
almost automatically. You could be serving others just to make yourself feel good, to make yourself feel like a big person, but that's not truly serving others. That's false service, and that you're doing that just to get your name in the papers or to be a, you know, a saint, so you can curry favor with the gods, you know what I'm saying? But if you're actually interested in helping other people, then by definition, you've removed your ego. And what did I say about these 40 failure modes? If you remove your ego, almost all 40 go away, right? Isn't that amazing that the golden rule and similar philosophies apply here? That ethical, you know, what I'm trying to teach is, in effect, is sales with more of a Buddhist twist, but it's all the same thing. Okay? You have to understand what I mean by that. Do you understand, everybody, why I said that if you go with service, if you're trying to serve others, that your ego's removed, all these failure modes go away? You know how wildly successful you can be then?
If you're helping people achieve their dreams and their objectives, they're not going to resist.
There's that, but I'm talking about how doing that can remove the ego, your ego, from the equation, which will make all those other problems go away.